The electrical conduction of our heart is connected to our emotions and the chemicals from our emotions that get pulsed through our bloodstream. That is going to impact our physiology.
Hello and welcome to another episode of the Reinvent Health Podcast. Here we get to chat to some of the world's most interesting and influential people about everything to do with physical, mental, and spiritual well-being. If you want to make healthy changes and live a better life, you are in the right place. Please don't forget to rate, leave a review, and share with everyone who wants to live their best life. And now your host, Nikki Robertson.
Welcome to my latest episode of the Reinvent Health Podcast. Dana Frost is a mother of five children, a wellness expert, and the host of the Vitally You podcast, shining a light on how you can feel younger while growing older. As you will hear in the episode, Dana's life experiences and extensive education has added to her ability to be empathetic and to facilitate healing with her coaching clients. You can find Dana at danafrost.com. She is all over social media, and you can download her free ebook using the link in the show notes. So, Dana, let's kick off with your story, because reading your bio, it's apparent that you, like so many who have found themselves in the functional medicine space, had to go searching for answers that weren't common knowledge. Mm-hmm. So let's start with your healing journey and where it has brought you.
Yeah. Thank you, Nikki. I actually really like talking about this because when I had my health crisis in 2011, it took me 9 months to get to, you know, to get to information from that actually was going to help me begin to heal. So I had my healing crisis in summer of 2011, and I had been to a museum with my kids and friends, another mom and her children, and they were staying in our home. We were on our way home, and I was so hungry. I'm sure people can relate to that. I was so hungry, and I just thought, I have to get home and make a snack, a healthy snack, before I make dinner. And so we rushed into the house, and I start quickly making guacamole, rather. And I stabbed in between my pointer finger and my middle finger with a knife, and it just started bleeding profusely. And I thought, oh my gosh, I know this is going to need to be glued or stitched. It's going to need something from the emergency room. But I don't have time for that right now. This is what so many women do. We just, you know, it was like, I don't have time. So I cleaned it up. I patched it together. I continued making the snack, making dinner. And fast forward, I called the emergency room after dinner. And I said, are you busy? This is just so I find women, you know, the house was full. I had a guest, I had children. I'm like, are you busy? And they said, no, we're not. And so I took myself over to the emergency room, and they were not busy. And I got right in, and the intake nurse took my pulse and started asking me questions. Are you an endurance athlete? Are you, have you felt tired? Do you get dizzy when you stand up, when you walk upstairs? And number one, I was an endurance athlete. I did a lot of walking, and I had been doing a boot camp that winter and spring, but I had been very, very tired. And so I started thinking, and I was like, oh yeah, when I walk up, we lived in a three-story home. When I walk up the steps, I do feel a little bit dizzy, and I rest on, you know, I rest when I get to one part. And then, yeah, sometimes when I stand up, I do feel dizzy. Wow. And I said, well, you know, I've been really tired. So, you know, suddenly the stab wound became secondary, and they had the cardiology team in the emergency room trying to figure out what was going on.
Wow.
And fast forward through that, I was admitted, and they weren't sure exactly what was going on. I had a bradycardia, which is a slow heart rate. So my beats per minute, yeah, When I entered the emergency room, 36 beats per minute, which is extraordinarily slow. Yeah. And in hindsight, Nikki, I remember that day, that morning, I had gone, it was a hot summer day, and I love the heat and I love summer. But I had taken my friend on a walk to the lake. We live close to Lake Michigan, outside of Chicago. And I had to ask her to go ahead of me because I was just like walking so slowly. And never had I ever done that. I mean, I then I remembered, oh, when I was traveling with my family earlier, like a few weeks earlier, I kept needing to sit down to rest. And I thought, you know, this is stress. A lot of, you know, my oldest daughter had just graduated from high school. We did a big party. It was a busy time of the year. I still had 5 kids at home. And I thought, oh, I'm just tired. I'll be able to rest when I get my daughter off to college. I find that's super typical of women, right? Mm-hmm. And so, you know, I'm in the hospital. I'm admitted in the middle of the night. And this young male nurse comes in to take vitals. And he just, one, I was upset. I had actually asked the ER team, can't I just go home and sleep and come back tomorrow? Like, I would much rather be in my own bed. Cool. And they said, absolutely no way. So middle of the night, and I am emotionally upset at that point. And this younger male nurse comes in, and he is honestly just like, oh my gosh, what are you doing here? Because I was 45 at the time. And he said, what are you doing here? I was almost 45, going to be 45 in like a week at that point. And I, you know, told him a little bit about the emergency room. And he said, wow, I mean, I'm just not used to seeing someone your age have this condition and be admitted to the emergency room for bradycardia. And that, you know, even that situation was, wow, what's going on with me? You know, they had done all these different examinations in the emergency room. Then we fast forward to the next day. Towards the end of the day, I did a stress test that day. And towards the end of the day, an electrophysiologist came in and he said, listen, I actually know what's going on with you. I don't know why it's going on with you, but they hadn't labeled it bradycardia. You have bradycardia. And we need to find out why, because the way that your heart is behaving, it's behaving like a worn out body part, but we've never seen this in a woman your age. We see this, it's very typical of a woman like 70 and beyond. Yeah. And so he asked me a bunch of different questions, and we had lived in South America for 10 years. So I had traveled to Africa multiple times, you know, throughout South America. So he wanted to know about potential exposures, you know, different viruses. And, you know, it's hard. I really just didn't know, but he ruled out. He took the exam, and then it took a while to get back. He ruled out one thing that actually would have caused, I'm just blanking on the name of it. It's tick bites.
Yes, Lyme disease.
Lyme's disease. Thank you. That was like, where is that word? They ruled out Lyme's disease. And at that point, that was a week later, he called me and he said, listen, your Lyme's disease is negative. We're not really sure why this has happened, but there's no correction. So we have to do a pacemaker. And he said, but we need to do it urgently because your heart is just barely beating and we need to take care of this for your own safety. So I remember sitting out on we had a covered porch outside, sitting there after receiving the news and just really being in shock. And I had been very healthy up to that point. I mean, I had a fairly healthy diet. I didn't have my nutrition training, but my husband and I started juicing in the early 90s before it was trendy. You know, I would say I ate a whole foods diet. I did love my sugar, which came into play. Diabetes has a very strong component in my health history. Mm-hmm. And, but everything was home cooked, you know, healthy whole foods. And I always, you know, moved my body. It's not like I didn't have a sedentary lifestyle. So I was so curious what was going on. I have the pacemaker implanted. It's a very easy surgery. You know, I stayed one night in the hospital. There's, you know, it's very straightforward. No concerns there. And my electrophysiologist said, Dr. Nazari, Dana, you are going to feel like your old self again. No more fatigue, blah, blah, blah. And I did not. I was just as tired. Now I had the security of knowing that my heart was beating, you know, appropriately. Yeah. But actually, I could feel the pacemaker. It was very awkward in terms of like the rhythm felt foreign to me. Right. And so I had to keep going back to figure out for him to figure out what is happening. And he said, it's all in your head. Yeah. This is all in your head. You just need to calm down and your pacemaker's working and everything's okay. So then I started taking myself to the endocrinologist because I could see my numbers from the emergency room and I could see the glucose numbers and I knew enough to know that, that was pretty high. Yeah. So the endocrinologist said, well, you're not diabetic, you know, you're pre-diabetic, but basically until you're diabetic, don't need to do anything.
Yeah.
Which I found, it was so, at that time, even it was so ridiculous to me because I knew that my grandmother, who I loved, died early because of diabetes, because she had inflammation. She was obese. She became obese in midlife. My father became obese in midlife. Both of them died at an early age because they were the inflammation and the diabetes, and they both became insulin dependent. They couldn't fight infection when they got it. And I knew much earlier than my health crisis, I didn't want to go down their health story. I didn't want to follow their genes. And so that was concerning to me, number one. So I just took it upon myself to look at my sugars, you know, just on my own. I started researching online and figuring that out. Then I went to a cardiologist and they determined the muscular structure was fine. Yeah. There was nothing else there. And I was continuing to go back to the electrophysiologist because I was having heart flutters in my heart. And when I would carry my groceries in, it was just a weird kind of zap of feeling. There were things just like that felt awkward. Uh-huh. It took him six months to really say, okay, let me get you back into the hospital and see what's going on. And sure enough, the pacemaker is set to a standard, you know, it's not set necessarily specifically adjusted to the person.
Right.
They put it in and it's standard, you know, it's set to a standard based on whatever.
What they think you should be doing. Yeah.
Yeah. Well, he had to adjust it. And once he adjusted it, those feelings of discomfort, of fluttering and feeling it was speeding up and slowing down, all of that went away. So the pacemaker, that was solved. I was still extraordinarily tired. He did say, well, let me refer you. She's impossible to get into, but if I give the referral, you'll get into this integrative wellness internist. And we'll see. She's very good at diagnostics. And so it took me 3 months to get into her. And when I got into her, when I thought my appointment was, I walked in and I was a month early. And right there because you remember, I was still very tired.
Yes.
I'm still tired. I'm still emotionally triggered by my situation. And I just burst into tears. And is there no way? I've waited 3 months. Is there no way? No, we're so sorry, but she's booked, but you have an appointment. It's just a month from now.
Oh no.
So that, I know. I mean, that really, Nikki, became such a pinnacle moment for me. As I left, I realized I am looking for someone to save me. And actually, I really need to, I need to be the person in charge here. You know, it was a very important turning point. And during this time, I had read a book called When the Heart Speaks by a female cardiologist, Mimi Guarneri. And I discovered heart math in this book. Are you familiar with heart math?
Very much so, yes.
Oh, wonderful. Okay. Yes, I'm glad that you are. So I discovered heart math and I had been practicing. I bought the device at the time. Oh. It was software connected to the computer. Mm-hmm. And every afternoon I did a session, and I had started tracking heart rate variability and looking at, you know, this connection between my heart mm-hmm. and the things that had happened in the years, the decade leading up to my health crisis. And I was beginning to put together the pieces of the puzzle of this level of stress I had, where there were episodes where I felt my heart was on fire.
Oh.
And, you know, I was going back and forth to the electrophysiologist, right? And I was saying, Dr. Nazari, listen, like, look at I brought the book. I think it was called Heart Math Solution, maybe. Yeah. Heart Math Solution. I brought my book and I gave him a copy. And he said, no, that there's no correlation. This is all in your head.
Yeah.
Blah, blah, blah. This is not stress. What I realized is my own responsibility and really mining my own life and my heart and my whole mind body system for everything that had happened and how that impacts my physiology. So there was so much growth, Nikki, that happened in between that initial appointment I thought I had and the actual appointment I had. So that when I got to that intake, it was a 2-hour intake with this doctor. I was really ready for, you know, what she wanted to do. And I was ready to do the tracking in my own life. We discovered a real storm in my gut, as I'm sure, you know, your listeners would be familiar with. I had parasites, candida, H. pylori. So, you know, we started clearing what I say now as a functional nutritionist, clearing the muddy waters. And she said, look, there are many ways that we can approach this, but you need to choose one. Let's choose a way and do that for a period of time and see what the results are. And so I began with acupuncture and traditional Chinese medicine herbs. And then tweaking my diet, getting really a lot more protein, plant protein, lean animal protein. I really, basically, we discovered adrenal fatigue. I started healing and cooking for, you know, to heal my adrenals. And I started to feel better. To feel better. I also changed my heavy duty workouts to a very, you know, mild way of working out. I started resting every day. I calmed everything down in my system and I started to feel better. So, but the reason I like sharing that is because I was honestly very lonely during that time, because there wasn't anyone else on my journey. And that really is the inspiration for why I decided to study functional nutrition, because I was already a life coach. I had been a life coach since 2007. And, I have a coaching tool from Dr. Martha Beck, who I studied under, called the Body Compass. And I already knew that issues get stuck in our tissues and the body gives us this deep well of information. And so I thought I can help my clients on another level with their physiology, with the things. For me, there were a lot of things that got stuck in my tissues, and unwinding all of that through alternative modalities really was the key to my healing.
Yeah. Wow. There are so many themes we can dig into here, because, you know, what really stands out for me is we heal when we decide to own our healing and own our responsibility and stop, you know, contracting it out to whether it's a doctor or a dietitian or a personal trainer. Is you've got to do the work. And it seems to me that and I see this in my practice, and I'm sure you do every day, is people come to you with an issue. And, you know, it's not about the issue. It's about everything that came before the issue.
You know, I know. And, yes, Nikki.
That's the thing. And my question when I look at people who come to me and want to lose weight or want to cure their diabetes is, are you ready to own this and do the work? And to maybe think very differently about your approach, because you know, you can't keep doing what you're doing and expecting a different result. So what was, you know, if you were a life coach years mm-hmm. before the big event, mm-hmm. what were the emotional, physical, what were the traumas? And, you know, they don't have to be massive traumas. They can be a series of tiny, but hundreds of small traumas that eventually break everything down. What in your journey would you say mm-hmm. were the pivotal experiences that created that big event that, thank goodness, you stabbed yourself because otherwise you would never have ended up in the hospital. And who knows what would have happened?
Yeah, that's a really important question, Nikki, and I'm glad that you ask it. Just thinking about it, and I haven't really even cried about this for years, but thinking about it right now, for whatever reason, in this moment, I do feel like this emotion welling up of, wow, the journey, right? The journey that we're on when we, you know, really own it and understand it. So when we were living in South America, we lived in Brazil actually for 8 years. We had lived in Argentina before that. When we were living in Brazil, we adopted 2 children. And actually prior to leaving the US, we wanted to adopt a child. It was in our plan. But what, you know, we got pregnant with our 3rd, and we were like, oh, this is right before we left the US. We're like, 3's a lot. Like, okay, we're finished. And that dream to adopt a child, you know, we just put it to rest. But then we were living abroad, and in South America, you have someone who's cleaning your house, you have domestic help. And so, you know, and I wasn't working. I couldn't work. I was the trailing spouse. And so there was a lot more time, and we just decided, you know, it's a long process, but we felt we had the capacity to adopt. And so we went just as, you know, foreigners living in Brazil, but legally we spoke Portuguese. We went to our local social agency with the government and we got approved, and we ended up adopting a brother and sister. And they were 3 and 5. They had been in the orphanage for 1.5 years, and there was a lot of trauma for them, a lot of trauma. And I naively went into it because I was a social worker and I thought I knew a lot. And I knew a lot up here. And I also thought our loving family, you know, can heal anything. And it's not like I said that out loud to myself, but I'm just, I think that was just a part of what I believed.
Yeah.
And, exactly. You know, transitioning our family of 5 to 7, there was a lot of heavy lifting and there was a lot of trauma for these kids, and they're amazing humans. But there was a lot of trauma, and you know, we all get activated if there's something in us that is there that can be activated. And so their trauma activated the wounded child in me.
Uh-huh.
And where I had felt, and I was never abandoned. I grew up in a loving home, but my parents were very busy. They were working. My dad, at age 5, they bought a restaurant bar. They were very, mm-hmm. very busy working. And, you know, in high school, there was a lot of friction between my parents. They eventually separated for 2 years and then they did get back together. But, you know, I just remember kind of feeling on my own a lot. I never really thought of it as abandonment, but what I can see in hindsight is I became activated, and there was a lot of frustration and some rage in me from their behavior. And, you know, that went, you know, and even though I was doing my work and we got support and help, but it's a long process to like work on yourself You know, it's not an overnight.
No.
It's not an overnight gig. It's a marathon. And so even though all along that decade, I was working on myself. So from 2000, we adopted the end of 2003, the health crisis was 2011. And I will say the end of 2008, we moved back to the US, and the heavy lifting on my shoulders for repatriating, it was really hard for me. I felt like I was not a foreigner, but I felt really like a foreigner where we moved to in the suburbs of Chicago. And the way we did family didn't in any way look like the way other people were doing families. And the landscape of child rearing had so dramatically changed since I had been raised as a child. There were no more free roaming children. Everybody was programmed. There were no children in the summer to hang out with because everybody was tucked away in programs and paid activities and, you know, traveling athletic teams. And there were just so that those first 2 years, it was just so much cognitive dissonance in my, for me, of where am I and how do I, how do I find my footing here? So that was happening too, in terms of if you look at stress level and trying to figure out, so you can see, you can imagine my heart rate variability. What was happening? Because we know from heart math that our emotions impact heart rate variability. And those times when I felt rage and I felt the heart on fire, yes, the heart was on fire. The electrical conduction of our heart is connected to our emotions and the chemicals from our emotions that get pulsed through our bloodstream. That is going to impact our physiology.
Absolutely. That absolutely. So when we change our story, or when we reframe our story, we reframe our relationship with ourselves and how we show up in the world. So when we change our relationship with ourselves and become more forgiving to the self and understand these things, we relate to people differently. What is your opinion? are the tools where anybody who's resonating with your story can start to begin rewriting their story, but you know, changing their inner narrative. I think that's what I'm trying to get to.
Yeah, I think that is so, so important. One of the things that I learned is when you said it changed the way that we relate to other people. My behavior that I was felt shameful about, you know, during the, you know, those, when I would become rageful, I was never proud of that. I was embarrassed by it. There was a lot of shame around that. And, you know, I had to, what it taught me is, oh my gosh, people who do things are, that we would judge, they're doing it because they're hurting themselves. And so I was able, and we had some spiritual help. We had, you know, support. I was able to drop, I just became accepting. I mean, truly, like, but for the grace of God, I mean, we are all doing the best we can with the circumstances and the information we have at any given time. Yeah. And so understanding that about yourself and really like owning, I need grace and mercy every moment. And when we give it to ourselves, we give it to others.
That's
but we
exactly
have to give it to ourselves. Yeah, we have to give it to ourselves first. And then it just free flows to, it free flows from us when we give it to ourselves.
That's exactly it, because it becomes abundant. It's almost a self-fulfilling energy. And when you mentioned the electromagnetic field of the heart, we're connecting with the electromagnetic field of the heart in the next person when we have that inner empathy. And you know, I think for me, the one thing that, and I, you know, keep harping on this, is what the pandemic brought to light for me was community and support and, you know, coherent energy where we are there for each other in the most simple of ways, which was really like put on the table. I don't think many of us gave it so much thought until we couldn't connect with people that we really, really wanted to connect with. You know, and yes, I can relate to what you've said, because when you are young and full of new hormones, or even very young and frustrated and afraid and out of your comfort zone, reacting mm-hmm. out and getting angry and frustrated is a normal response mm-hmm. to fear. Mm-hmm. And we do get shamed by this behavior, and we mm-hmm. moderate our natural being in the mm-hmm. world. And when we moderate our energy and suppress our natural expression of either love or fear, something's going to go awry. And mm-hmm. I don't know anybody who isn't going through this on some level. Mm-hmm. So this is all of our stories. And, mm-hmm. you know, this is the power of sharing our journeys and putting it out there, because mm-hmm. you're going to touch the heart of somebody, whether they be 100,000 miles away from where you're sitting right now mm-hmm. Or around the corner. And that's the mm-hmm. gift we have as human beings to mm-hmm. be able to connect with the next person and just simply own your experience. It is so valuable. So, you know, I see mostly women. I'm sure you do as well. Mm-hmm. And we tend to be so out of sync with our innate wisdom. Mm-hmm. We ignore the messages, like you've said, that our bodies are screaming at us, a silent mm-hmm. scream until we hit a crisis. Mm-hmm. Where do we start? Where do we start? How do we start listening when there's so much, you know, demands, there's chaos, there's families, there's work. We're trying to be the best. I don't know. And we'll get to your last podcast episode. And I really want to dive into this, the Gwyneth Paltrow one, because I resonated with you on so many levels. And I agreed with you on so many points about that, because we hold ourselves up to these ideals that are mm-hmm. ridiculous. So where mm-hmm. do we start, mm-hmm. you know, on the ground, helping ourselves to heal ourselves?
Yeah, I think that's a really important question, Nikki. And we have to start by slowing things down. We have to start actually with the mindset. You mentioned this earlier. It starts with the mindset and giving, you know, taking ownership. And you say to your clients, I say to mine too, are you ready? Because there's a lot of heavy lifting, and you are the only person who can do it. Oh, yeah. I can be here and I'm a guide. I am only a guide. I am not with you 24/7. And so where I have my clients start is you've got to get quiet. And I have a podcast on quiet time. And for some people, it's 2 minutes a day and that's what they can do. But you have to shut the noise, the external stimuli, the voices, the influence. You've got to shut the stimuli, turn your phone off, turn your computer off, turn the TV off. You've got to get quiet and you've got to start tuning in to your wise inner teacher. And, you know,
that's big.
It's big. I mean, it seems like it's so small. Some of these, the things that we need to do are so simple that people could brush them off, but they are profoundly important. Yeah. So you get quiet. And then I always say you need to connect to your breath. And I was saying that before HeartMath, because I did a study on the breath. And it is the expression of your spirit. So when you tune your attention to your breath, you are literally connecting the body with your spirit, with your soul. And so tune yourself to your breath. Do something as simple as the four qualities of a healthy breath: deep, slow, quiet, regular. And just begin to attune, you know, your mind to your breath, to your body, and then I have people bring in HeartMath, because I found HeartMath to be so powerful, because you're tapping into your energy body with HeartMath. And so that, you know, that's, I just find that to be a successful place to start, and opening up all of your senses to the information that's being, you know, communicated from your own system every moment of every day.
It is. And so there's so many questions. So we all know that there is a significant mind-body connection. Our thoughts create chemistry. But I think most of us don't realize that we have control over the quality of our thinking, that we have some agency over not letting our thoughts run away with us and create a negative signature in the physical mm-hmm. body. Mm-hmm. You know, yes, and the quiet time, I think a lot of us steer away from quiet time because that's when these thoughts come up and these, you know, the monkey mind goes crazy mm-hmm. and it's difficult to find for a lot mm-hmm. of people, especially with the buzz of the world around us, that quiet introspective space. So mm-hmm. what are your tips as a coach mm-hmm. to moderate that part of us that stops us trusting ourselves?
Mm-hmm. Okay, what are the parts of us that help us moderate? I think that we need, you know, what's coming to my mind is a lesson from a therapy session that I was in. And it was in this relationship with one of my children. What I learned in therapy is that the survival instinct and is so strong that if you don't get on top of it in your thoughts, it takes over. And that's what was happening with me. My own will to survive, you know, took over. And so we need education about the relationships we're in, the people, you know, the way we spend our time. So I actually needed to get education, cerebral education, about even my daughter and what she was going through. And understanding what happens with people who have early childhood trauma and reframing. So for me, it was reframing her behavior and understanding her behavior was not for malicious reasons. No. Her behavior was because she was just trying to survive and she would do as she should do anything to survive.
Yeah.
You know, and so I needed education and I think we all need education about the dynamics, the complexity that are happening in our life.
Yeah.
Because that's when we can reframe, you know, we can reframe our thoughts. So we have to have that understanding. Now, what I say when people have the monkey mind and they sit down, it's just consider one, you're not your thoughts. Just consider them like a waterfall. They're flowing. You get to choose whether or not you grab onto them and uh-huh. you can just release them. So just release the thought that's coming. But I find we need to use our breath to do that, you know, yes. breathe it in, breathe it out, breathe it uh-huh. in, breathe it out, and feel like muscularly, I ask people, feel your muscle structure.
Yeah.
When this thought comes, when you're quiet, you can actually feel what muscles get turned on. Where do I have tension in my body?
Yeah.
Bring your breath and release it. You really, it's tracking. You have to be, you know, the premier tracker in your own mind of your mind body system, because it's going to show you the way, but you might need to do some information collection, which is what I needed to do. And I find most people need to do that.
Yes. We don't know what we don't know until we start realizing, that's what's going on. A useful tool that I've been using for a while now is when I have these negative thoughts, is to ask myself, whose voice is it? And so often mm-hmm. it's not my voice. It's somebody else's. It's an employer or a parent it's like, no, I'm not going to let you into my head. And you can almost make it kind of comical, I suppose, when you start mm-hmm. realizing it's not all you. This is an old soundtrack that's mm-hmm. and it's not serving you anymore.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Are you familiar with the work of Byron Katie?
Yes. Very
okay,
much.
So that is a tool to reframe the thoughts that I use with clients, the four her four questions. Uh-huh. That is a very powerful tool too, because it's information collecting. When you put the thought under a microscope, it can always be turned around at some level.
Always. Is it true? Mm-hmm. Is it useful? I can't remember mm-hmm. all four of them, but there are a really useful break state in that mm-hmm. runaway train of our self mm-hmm. negative self-talk.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And then if you want to create the new neural pathways, the last question is turn it around.
Yeah.
You know, what's the turnaround? So then you've got to create a new statement, a new belief that you replace the old one for, and you start repeating that to yourself. We train our mind like we train our muscles with repetition.
Yes.
You know, we have to be engaged. And I, you know, it's just so easy today, Nikki, just to be on autopilot with our mind, to just be entertained all the time, entertained with TikTok, entertained with Netflix or Apple TV. And we're, you know, just being, we're being programmed.
Yeah.
We need to remember we are being programmed 24/7. Yeah. And we need either we decide what's being programmed or we just let it go and we just expose ourselves and say, I'll just take whatever comes my way and I have no agency.
Yeah. Yeah. And this really worries me with children is their need to be constantly online. Mm-hmm. Terrifying, because where's the quiet time? Where's the introspection? Where's that learning about who you are? And as parents, we've got to stop that from going.
Yeah. And, you know, it's so interesting because if I go back and reflect on when we returned to the U.S., and watching all the kids be programmed. So we've got a generation of kids who grew up not having a lot of free time to get bored, to be with their own thoughts. And just, you know, when you've got nothing to do, you start getting creative, you talk to yourself, you know, a lot of things kind of come forward for you as a person. Mm. And I really see that we've lost we have a generation. They haven't been raised in a way where they were able just to free flow.
Yeah. Yeah. And that's going to bring with it new mental health challenges, new physical health challenges, things that we don't have we're not equipped yet to understand where these come from, but this is a warning. If we don't see this as a warning, I don't know what. Mm-hmm. Yeah. So let's chat about aging well, because we both work predominantly with women and this is a big deal. We all want to age well. We don't necessarily want to look like Barbie dolls, but to embrace aging. And, you know, I was listening a while ago to your episode on the vitamin drips. And, it's my pet peeve when people think you can just go and hook yourself up to an IV and make up for all your bad behavior. But yes, I mean, you were talking about Gwyneth and her responsibility as a public figure to portray a realistic image. And she's talking about aging gracefully. She's not an example of aging gracefully at all. And we've got so much misinformation out there. So for the average woman who wants to age healthily and increase their, health span, where do we start with that? And it's not about, it's about getting the sleep, getting the quiet time, getting the movement and the nutrition. But when you're really, really busy, where do we start making sure that how we act now is going to determine how we are when we're 90?
Yeah, well, I think that you really do want to start with your mindset. What is it that you want from yourself in 10, 20, 30, 40 years? How do you want to grow old? I made a decision years ago as I watched my grandmother and my dad follow this pattern that I just did not want to age that way.
Yeah.
And so, but that was a mindset that I purposed. I do believe it starts with your mindset. And as you said, sleep, some of these things that we all know, but we do actually want to look at glucose levels. You know, how is our body if we're not metabolizing glucose, we will have aging, more rapid aging. Uh-huh. We do want to look at gut health. These are the two places where I would say everybody needs to start.
Yeah.
Get your foundation, the foundation of your health, get it in order. Because you can do it. And you know, if you don't have money, you don't have to spend money on expensive tests. Huh? There's so much free information on the internet. You can begin to calm things down. Everybody's different. So, you know, are you pooping? What is your poop like? You know, download the Bristol stool chart. Are you bloated? You know, do you get bloating? Yeah.
IBS, constipation.
Yes. Thank you.
Yeah.
All these kinds of things that indicate that you might have you know, gut dysbiosis, you need to know those things. Just like I had to treat parasites. Mm. I actually just had to treat parasites. I was in Brazil and I came home with parasites. Sure. You know, if you've got gut dysbiosis, you need candida, you need to clear those things. And so that is physiology that directly plays into how you are going to age.
Yeah. Yeah. You know, and so many women, like, they look in the mirror and they look at the wrinkles or the saggy skin and then they go, well, I've got to do something about aging well. But what is on your skin is a reflection of what's going on in the gut.
Yes. Your liver is directly related. Your skin is directly related to your liver. So yeah, you know, anybody wants to do, you know, to their skin, whatever. But just know it's the same conventional model. It's treating the symptom. It's treating what's seen with the naked eye. Yeah. There's so much going on internally. You can do all the cosmetics and even, you know, for your emotional health, you can even take the pill to calm anxiety, for depression. But you've got to deal with all the stuff going on internally, you know, emotionally with your thoughts in your body. You have to deal with the internal stuff. And when you deal with that internal stuff, I promise you, if you'll clean up, you know, the gut and your thoughts, and you get the digestion working, you know, effectively, your radiance will be so strong. Yeah. I don't have, you know, super defined muscles, but I love the movement I do every day on my power plate, this vibrational power plate. Yeah. I just feel so happy when I'm on my power plate. And so I'm loving the movement. That right there, there's this positive feedback. We need positive feedback in our life, because then we are releasing chemicals that are fueling our system.
Absolutely. And I've always said that, you know, you exercise not to burn calories. We exercise for the endorphins that it gives us, because when we're feeling good, we'll make better choices. And if we don't use it, we will lose it. There's a million reasons why we should be moving. But I think for me, that's the most important reason, is it makes you feel better.
Yeah. And, you know, I was just thinking, you know, we all know people who are super, super fit, but there's a rigidity to them.
Oh, yeah.
You know, and their body, even though they could, you know, win some athletic performance, their body feels rigid. Uh-huh. And, you know, if you go digging, you might find that the thoughts are rigid. And, you know, so just, I feel that out there, you know, be thinking about that when you're thinking about your own health and your own longevity. Rigidity. Now, I was a social worker and I worked in long-term care. So I worked with the geriatric population and I absolutely loved it. Yeah. But what you see is with people who have dementia, all like the rigidity comes out, all the things that you can consciously keep the tamper on. When you have no filter, it will come out. So how do you want to age? Do you want to age where you are flexible, not just in your body, but in your thinking, in your emotions? Because everything you're doing now is going to determine how you age in the future. And as women too, we actually need a little bit of padding. Like, as we age, there's a reason our bodies change and have these different cycles, because sometimes we need extra fat. We're carrying a baby, we need extra fat. We're, you know, I think menopause is just that great invitation to really dial into where have we been, where, you know, where are we now, where do we want to go? And as women, we might have extra padding in menopause. Yeah. That doesn't mean that we're unhealthy. You know, it's just, there's a lot of stuff here to talk about, right?
There's so much, in fact, it's enough to talk for another whole other hour. is specifically menopause. And it is, it's an invitation, I believe, to reassess the next 50 years of your life, as it were. Mm-hmm. Like, where do you want to be? Who do you want to be? What do you want to think? It could be an experience full of potential if we just think about it that way, not a decline, but just a different route. And yeah, if the message is just so skewed, you take a pill not to get pregnant, you take another pill not to get hot flashes, we are squashing our feminine power so much. And yes, I understand why we take pills. I've got no argument with pharmaceuticals when they're used appropriately, but you can't take a pill for everything without doing the work. And this is where the problems are so, so significant. From your point of view, and yes, let's say we've got people listening to the show who don't have the budget to go to the Cleveland Clinic for a full functional medicine protocol. Where do we start? And I loved what you said about your thoughts and your gut. If you can get those two right, you will be fine. And very few people have got either of those, if not both of those, just completely not okay. Mm-hmm. So where do we, gut, yes. Where do we start? Mm-hmm. If somebody's listening going, well, I don't even know how to unpick this ball of, wool here. It's such a mess. What are my first steps, regardless of age or gender?
I would say you need to start tracking and, you've got to get information. You need to start tracking. I have a tracker for my coaching clients. It comes from my nutrition school, food, mood, and poop. And you add on that water, you've got to start getting information and also, understand how you're metabolizing sugars. That's a really important thing. And that's, that's not a hard metric to get. Any doctor will do some baseline labs, find out, what's going on with some baseline labs, understanding that's not expensive. Do you have, I also think of magnesium and vitamin D, what are those levels? Because that also is going to be impacting your mood, your immune response. So understand, at one point after living in Chicago, after living in the sunshine for a decade and moving to Chicago, after 2 years, I got my labs and my vitamin D was just on the floor. And I wondered why I was so tired. So I had to start supplementing. I wasn't going to get the sun in Chicago that I needed. And it was amazing supplementing vitamin D3. It made a huge, significant improvement. Yeah. And look at your B vitamins are another thing that typically can be very low for people. So you need to get some information. You might need support, so track, what is going on, download the Bristol stool chart. It's available online. That will allow you to understand, do I need to do some detoxing? And, where I ask people to start, it's just the detox. Your body is designed to detox every day and it's called nighttime. So if you just don't eat from ideally sundown to sunup to sunrise or dinner to breakfast, 12 hours, don't eat anything. Hydrate really well. Start there. That's a big starting point for a lot of people. And then again, each person is different, but if you can, you eat, you eat and you digest and you rest. That's the pattern the body likes.
Yeah.
Rise at sunrise. So get your eyes out in the sun, even if there are clouds, first thing in the morning. Eat, digest, and rest. Don't keep eating all day unless, there are cases where people need to eat. Give your body a couple of hours, 3-4 hours in between your meals. And then give your body time to clear out and rejuvenate itself overnight. That would be a big start for most people. Be really mindful about your exposure to light at night. In terms of try to keep the lights in your home on dim in the evening, try not to be, we all hear this now, exposure to screens at night can impact your sleep. And that's,
for sure.
That's all really true.
Yeah.
Those are just, and then whole food. I would just say with the diet, even if you just said, I'm not going to eat any packaged food.
Right.
That is also a great place to start. You can download Whole 30.
Yeah.
It does. Download Whole 30 recipes. Nom Nom Paleo is one of my favorite online cooks.
Yeah.
She's got so many amazing recipes. There's so much available to us that cost us nothing.
Yeah. There's a huge amount of resource out there. Mm-hmm. I guess, again, is you've got to reach crisis, unfortunately, for most people, before mm-hmm. we take action. And it can be mm-hmm. avoided. Wow, it can be avoided. But I think it's, you know, it's the way we function. We end up in this mm-hmm. uncomfortable comfort zone, and then we're forced mm-hmm. to make changes. So, Dana, mm-hmm. thank you so much for your time. This has been what a beautiful conversation. I've had so much fun, and it's been so enlightening and uplifting speaking to you. And I would really love to speak to you again. And we can dig deeper into women's health. But yeah, there's some real pearls of wisdom there. And I'm hoping that anybody listening can just take one or two or three things that resonate for them and action them, because you will feel such a difference in your life.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. Well, Nikki, it's been such a pleasure to be here, and I would love to give your listeners a gift.
Oh, wow.
I have an ebook.
Okay.
Tips to Daily Vitality. So I will send you that link for the show notes, but it's just been, I've loved having this conversation with you. Thank you.
Thank you so much. Yes. And we'll put that in the show notes, and my goodness, what a gift. Thank you so much for your time.
Thank you once again for joining me for another episode of the Reinvent Health Podcast. As usual, all of my guests' details can be found in the show notes page on Apple Podcasts, Anchor, or wherever else you listen to your podcasts. Please don't forget to rate on Apple and leave a review.